You're listening to the Whale Scout Podcast with your host, Whitney Neugebauer.
Welcome to the show, everyone, and happy Whale Wednesday. My name is Whitney Neugebauer with Whale Scout. Today is Wednesday, June 25th, and today NOAA has released a 10-year report on the southern resident killer whales. In the report, they outline all of the research findings that they've made over the last 10 years, and they also outline some of the new research questions that have been brought about by the questions that they've answered. And we are going to have Dawn Noren on the show. She is a research biologist with the Northwest Fisheries Science Center, and she's battling a bit of a cold today. So we're just going to do a short interview with her, and she really helped write the report. And so we're really happy to have her on the show. But first, I wanted to give you guys an update of what's going on with the whales and any upcoming events. So as I mentioned on the previous show, I've been spending a lot of time up in the San Juan Islands, and that's where we expect to see the southern resident killer whales spending a lot of their time in the summer months. And as many of you mentioned, I mentioned that last summer was a horrible sighting, or a horrible year for sightings. The whales just weren't spending that much time in the inland waters, and people were very alarmed. So this year, J-POD came back in around the 31st of May. And we had some of L-POD come in as well a little bit later. But now, here we are in mid to late June. It appears that the rest of L-POD have come in, and J-POD has been hanging around, and they've been quite literally partying together, as some people have been mentioning. There's some neat photos on the Whale Scout Facebook page from people that work as naturalists up, you know, on whale watching boats, and some photos taken from the Limekiln Lighthouse too that I took from shore of J-POD, and some students that were in on the island with researcher Bob Otis. And so there's really cool photos there and on the website, and I encourage you to check those out. Also, just came out very recently was Sandra Pollard's book, which is all about the captive industry of killer whales that were removed from Puget Sound and brought to places like SeaWorld. You know, southern resident killer whales were some of the very first whales taken out of the wild and put in captivity. And there were actually way too many. We didn't really know exactly how many killer whales there were in this area. And so when people started removing them, then people started asking after that, well, geez, how many are there? And is this practice sustainable? Turns out that no, we probably removed about a third of the population. And there's a lot of stories that go along with these captures. And the book, it's called Puget Sound Whales for Sale. And again, Sandra Pollard is the author. And I encourage you all to go out and buy it on the Whale Scout website. You can buy it through a link on our site, and we get a happy little kickback from Amazon. So I encourage you to go to whalescout.org and click the link through there to buy the book. There will be a signing with the author at the Langley Whale Center from 3 to 5 p.m. on Saturday, June 28th. And I recommend that you all go and meet her and get your book signed. And that sounds like a great event. As always, if you have an event that you would like me to share on the Whale Scout podcast, I encourage you to send those to director@whalescout.org. And without further ado, I'd like to invite Dawn Noren on the show. We are on the show with Dawn Noren. She is a research biologist with NOAA Fisheries. Welcome to the show, Dawn.
Thanks very much.
Can you explain to us what there's a big report today released from NOAA, and you helped write the report. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, the report showcases a lot of the research and conservation efforts that have been done in the last 10 years, basically since there's been some money, congressional funding directed to understand the population dynamics and hopefully aid in the recovery of the southern resident killer whales. So the report pretty much outlines a lot of the science that's been conducted by us, the NOAA researchers as well as our colleagues and others that have received funding related to this killer whale money, and talks about all the great findings that have come out of the research that's been done for the last 10 years since this program started.
Yeah, and it's a great report, and there's neat videos that you can watch also on the same page, and really neat graphics. And so I have the link on the Whale Scout website for everyone to go check out, and I encourage you to read it. One milestone, an accomplishment that is listed is that you guys are starting to really understand more about the winter habitats of southern resident killer whales. Do you think that maybe there's enough information now that critical habitat could be designated along the outer coast?
Well, so I'm a research scientist, so we feed the data and the information to the management side, the regional office, and they're the ones that can then make the decision about whether there's enough data there to actually designate critical habitat. I think we've made incredible strides in the last 10 years. When we started, there was just basically about 25 sightings that were collected over the last 30 years in the Outer Coast that were confirmed southern residents. We've increased that number immensely with colleagues and collaborators to increase sighting network efforts and also to go conduct our own research cruises, looking for the whales, dragging hydrophones, listening for the whales, plunking hydrophones along the coast to pick up the sounds of the whales when they're swimming by, and then we've satellite tagged some. So I think the strides have been amazing, especially in the last couple years, and I think we're getting a better handle. I'm not quite sure if there's enough yet to really designate the critical habitat. I think we definitely have a better handle on their habitat use patterns and how wide they range and how often some pods may go down to California. But, you know, I think that's up to the managers.
Is there anything that surprised you as a researcher when your team was out searching for the whales on the outer coast? I know that in the report it says they've been sighted as far north as Southeast Alaska and as far south as Monterey Bay. Did that surprise you, or has any of their other movement surprised you on the outer coast?
Well, I think we're all surprised a little bit by the Alaska sighting, but that was from some photographs that surfaced from other researchers. So just, you know, putting the word out that we're very interested in getting more data from all avenues, that was very beneficial to get that information. Well, it really surprised us in 2004 when we put our first efforts out on the research cruise to actually go look for these guys. It's like finding a needle in a haystack. The weather is really awful. Hydrophone does really well, better than observers, but even that's weather limited. If it's too rocky, you have to pull it in. So we were actually shocked we ran into them. One year, after 21 days, it was near the end of the cruise, we ran into El Pod off of Westport. So, I mean, I think we knew they were out there. There had been sightings in Monterey. It is interesting to know that they kind of go down to California quite a lot. I'm not sure if, you know, we all thought for sure they were always going down to California and seemed to make regular trips within a year, but one of the tagged animals definitely went into Northern California quite a lot, so in one tagging session. So, you know, it definitely is an eye-opener.
Yes, that is. And a lot of the media that I've seen come out surrounding this report has highlighted some of the striking amounts of contaminants that are in southern resident killer whales. This isn't necessarily new information, which is my understanding, but what's being done right now with the chemicals that are already in the environment that were possibly even banned decades ago? I mean, what's being done to clean those up?
Well, again, that's something that the region is really involved with. So they are meeting with other entities that are responsible for dealing with contaminants in the environment. It's pretty hard to get rid of these legacy contaminants, but they are, you know, trying to tackle as many different avenues as they can to deal with this. I think that's one of the hardest things that is going to be that we're going to be able to face for sure is how do you get rid of all the stuff that's just floating in the ocean that's pretty much persistent. That's a huge issue. I don't even know, you know, how much is feasible, but they're definitely working with other entities to try to figure out how to remove PBDEs from wastewater treatment plants, trying to model PBDAs in the Puget Sound to understand more about transport. And so those are some efforts that are being worked on. And they also have, the managers have a PBD working group that they've been working on trying to deal with a lot of these issues.
Can you share with us some of the new research that you're going to be embarking on in the 10 years to come?
So I think, you know, we've put a lot of efforts in the past couple years and the recent years looking at winter distribution and coastal distribution. We're not going to reduce that at all. We're going to, you know, continue that. We're going to increase our efforts to try to get samples from foraging events, if we can, tissues, scales that are dropped from the fish, or fecal material that's produced from the whales out in the outer coast to get a better handle on what they're eating. I mean, we have some information on that, but I definitely think we need to increase our sample size to try to determine what the winter diet, the diet is that's happening when they're out on the outer coast. We're also still trying to get a better handle on what are the noise impacts. Noise is still a big issue. So getting some more information using other species such as dolphins to try to get a handle on some of the energetic impacts of some of the behavioral and vocal responses that the whales are doing when surrounded by vessels or exposed to noise. There's still some more information that we need to really get at for foraging efficiency. That's something we definitely need to investigate. It's really kind of a difficult question to get at. We know that they need a lot of fish. We're not sure how well they capture fish. We don't exactly know. We know that sound definitely impacts their ability to catch fish. We don't really have a good handle on what does that mean in terms of numbers of fish they can't catch if they're exposed to vessels. We also need to know, in order for them to catch the fish they need, how many fish need to be available to them. So those kind of questions are very important. They're very hard to tackle, but those are things that we still need to look at.
Yeah. How would you go about answering questions like that?
I think we're still talking about some of them. I mean, I think it's more straightforward to potentially model how noise effects might impact their foraging ability to detect fish, how they capture the fish or are able to maneuver and catch fish, and how many do they need to have available to get to that one fish that they're going to eat at that point. That's very difficult. There is a project using D-tags, which are basically suction cup mounted tags on the whales in the San Juans, that is kind of looking at a lot of these things. Basically, what is the foraging behavior? What is the received level of the whale? They're looking at dive depths and some index of speed and how the animal turns in the water, and then they also are monitoring boats around it. So I think that study may glean some of this information that we need. It's a complex data set, and it's a lot of data, so it's going to take some time.
And I was reading in the report that the behavior of the killer whales when vessels are present, it is affected, and sometimes they use more surface-active behaviors. Is that correct? And in theory, use a lot more energy. How do you study, you know, just how many calories a whale is burning by doing a tail slap? Or do any of the captive killer whale groups like SeaWorld allow you to use their whales to study things like that?
That's a great question. So that is actually the area that I'm interested in, because my background is physiology and I've done a lot of energetics work. And currently, I haven't really pursued working with SeaWorld or killer whales, just because, you know, logistics of working with bigger animals on show are difficult. But I have been working in collaboration with researchers at the University of California, Santa Cruz, where I did my PhD work, with my former advisor, who has a couple of Navy dolphins that she has that are trained for studies to measure energetics. It takes a lot of training. So these animals were kind of up to speed already to be able to do the behaviors that are required to measure energetics. And I use oxygen consumption. Basically, it's to sit under a dome and we monitor how much oxygen they're breathing after surface active behavior bouts we've done, and actually recently vocal behavior, to look at changes in vocal behavior.
Wow, that is really fascinating. And so then you take a dolphin and then you kind of extrapolate it to be, you know, about the size of a killer whale, I guess.
Yes. We are going to try to model up with body size. It's a pretty easy thing to do.
Over the next 10 years, one of the other things that I saw in your report was that you're going to be studying carrying capacity of this region. In the recovery plan for the listing of killer whales, it mentions a variety of measures that would determine if the killer whales can be considered recovered or still endangered. You know, what will happen if researchers determine that the carrying capacity is actually much lower? I mean, will we make steps to try and raise the carrying capacity?
You know, that's a really complicated question, and that's a huge area that's going to have to be discussed by a lot of experts in that field. And I think that in order to do that, they're probably going to call like a working committee together to try to assess that. I can't really explain how that would be or come about. Obviously, people have mentioned that it's possible the carrying capacity is lower now. So that's definitely in people's minds. And I think, you know, that when that bridge or if that bridge has to be crossed, it's going to involve probably a working group.
Right. And I'll ask one last question here and then let you go. I always like to ask, you know, people that come on the show, if they had one thing that they could share with members of the public that would help recover southern resident killer whales. And what would be that one thing that people should do to help out?
You want to be a good citizen and, you know, clearly just, you know, treat the environment with respect. Recycle, don't dump things down the drain, and just be cognizant of your actions.
Great. Thank you so much. And I know today was a big day for you with the release of the report, and I just want to thank you for coming on the show, and good luck with all of your future research over the next 10 years.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Whale Scout podcast. Your voluntary donation goes toward the recovery of whale species and enhanced whale watching opportunities in the Pacific Northwest. Please visit www.whalescout.org for more information. Bye.